Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hello, and welcome to Off the Beat and Track Podcast. I'm your host. I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I sit and chat to Jonas Bure of the band Mew, and now the band Tackies as well. We talk about that new project during this episode, and we talk about his career in Mew, and we talk about some wonderful records, and well, we just have a lovely chat, which I guess if you're a regular listener, you know the format by now, and it's very much similar to what you've heard from previous episodes, but with completely new tracks and a completely new guest. If you're new to this podcast, as I've mentioned, there's a back catalogue, and that back catalogue is over 300 episodes deep now, and so go and explore it. Once you've listened to this great episode with Jonas, then you can go and explore the back catalogue and hear me chatting to artists as diverse as musicians such as Foo Fighters, Motley Crue, Fatboy Slim, Suede, Idols, Sleaford Mods, and I spoke to comedians such as James Acaster, Ed Gamble, Jade Adams, producers such as Butch Vig. You can hear me talking to Butch Vig, which is an incredible conversation. And I say incredible, I mean Butch was incredible. My chit-chat was very average, fair to middling. And also, I've spoken to lots of wonderful actors. You can hear me speaking to Maxine Peake, Joe Hartley, Amanda Abington. The list goes on. Tony Pitts, that's a recent episode that's had a wonderful response. So once you've listened to this lovely chat with Jonas, go and explore the back catalogue. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do that in a very traditional way, which is telling your friends about this podcast. That's always good. You can just subscribe on the platform that you listen to podcasts on. That's good. Then that way you don't miss anything. If you'd like to really support it, then you can go over to Patreon, and that's www.patreon.com / off the beaten track. And then, yeah, for as little as 79p a month, you get video episodes, you get radio shows, you get upfront releases, you get all sorts of stuff. And yeah, but fundamentally, you're supporting the podcast with your 79 pence. So if you'd like to do that, that's much appreciated. I also understand that, you know, we're still in the grips of a pandemic as such, and that pennies can be tight. So no pressure. No pressure. Just enjoy the podcast. You can find out about all that stuff I've just said at offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. But right now, you're in for a treat. Please enjoy today's episode with the wonderful Jonas Bure. Right, I've got to take a quick break in this podcast because I've got some super exciting news. Off the Beat and Track Podcast is proud to go into partnership with the Cacao Bar from Hotel Chocolat. That's right. The Cacao Bar is not a chocolate bar. It's all the best bits of a chocolate bar put into a really exciting new alcoholic range. That's right. Gin, vodka, and a beautiful range of cream liqueurs. So one of the big bonuses of this partnership is obviously I'm super thrilled to have Hotel Chocolat working with us, but they sent me a great big box of this stuff. And I'm telling you, it's amazing. Go and check it out. www.hotelchocolat.com or over on the socials at Hotel Chocolat. But yeah, in the coming months, there's going to be opportunities for you to get involved with competitions with us, to win bottles of stuff. There's loads of exciting things coming soon, and I can't be more happy to say that this podcast is in partnership with the Cacao Bar from Hotel Chocolat. All right, let's get back to the podcast.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Stu Whippin.
Okay, we are recording. Jonas, how are you today?
I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
I'm not too bad. That looks like a very beautiful studio you're sitting in there.
Yeah, thank you. It's just my home studio.
So with that in mind, before we get on to your song choices, how have you found the last 14, 15 months as both a human being and an artist?
I found it challenging, as I think most people. It's been kind of grueling for me to watch all our tours being canceled. With Mew, I kind of, in 2019, I really needed to take a break from the band and focus on some other things. But then, of course, we're meant to go on a big tour in 2020, which was canceled. And then, you know, this year, in the beginning of the year, everyone thought, okay, now it's back to normal, and it still isn't. And just as late as yesterday, I had another show canceled. So, you know, I'll believe it when I'm on stage singing.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you feel like suddenly having that time where, I guess a lot of musicians crave to have that time where they can not have to tour and look forward to some downtime where they can write and such. Was when that presented itself, did you feel a weight of expectation on yourself to start writing, is that something you folks, or can you apply yourself like that, or does it have to kind of come from somewhere?
I did feel like, okay, this is my chance to do some of the things that I've been kind of dreaming about, finding the time to do creatively. But I actually, I did come off right off like scoring a TV show in 19. So I was a little bit spent in the beginning. I was in Cuba actually when the lockdowns started happening and the travel bans, and we made it back home. But then I actually, for like a few months, I kind of just procrastinated a lot. I kind of felt overwhelmed, I think, with the freedom to do other stuff. You know, it's like, sure. Oh, where do I even begin, you know? So I actually binged watched a lot of TV shows and made a lot of nice food and just... But then later on, when I started talking to my friend Toby, I actually rented a studio right next to his, and we've been talking for years about doing a project together, and we just never found the time. But then since both our schedules were kind of cleared, all of a sudden we've suddenly had the time to actually do it, which became the project Takis, that we just put out our first song and working on more stuff. So that's exciting for me.
And so what was you looking to get from that collaboration? Like, was it a different kind of sound than any of the stuff you've done previously? Was it something that you talked about on and off for a long time, actually collaborating and working together? Like, how did that project kind of present itself?
Well, I mean, we've worked together over the years. We had a band together when we were like 13 or 14
years old. Oh, really?
Yeah. And also we kind of played, there was this band that kind of had members in it, and then some of the guys ended up being in Mew, and Toby ended up being in Blue Foundation. But in the young, like when we were really young, we all played together. So I don't know if we had any particular goal other than just making music together, you know, and we did have the rule that we didn't want to make something that sounded like Blue Foundation or like Mew.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if we quite succeed. I think some of the stuff we have sounds a little bit like a mixture, as it probably would, you know, as you would expect. But I do think that hit on some things that neither of us have done before creatively. So that's been really exciting.
Well, let's start the playlist. And for track one, Jonas, I'm going to ask you please to determine a song that you regard as having the greatest ever intro, please.
Yeah, that's a tough question.
Everyone says that's the tough one.
Yeah, I would have to go with Prince's Let's Go Crazy. That intro is so magnificent that nothing could live up to it. And I actually do feel a little bit of a letdown when it goes into the da 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 da. I mean, it's great, but it's the intro just,
yeah,
nothing can follow that and live up. It's just so majestic and strange and musical and beautiful, you know, and exciting. It builds up to something, you know.
And with that in mind, a question that I like to ask musicians and songwriters, that track there is a prime example of something that if you took it to a record company now and said, right, this is going to be the lead single from this album,
right,
they'd be like, no, there's no way you can have an intro that long. And so with that, where I'm going with this question, and I've desperately tried to ask this question correctly now for over 300 episodes, and I never quite get it out right. But from when you started writing songs way back and through, and when you started writing with Mew, to writing now, are you affected by the kind of the things that are put in place now for kind of more popular music to, right, start with the chorus now, and you know, you need to grab them quickly, attention spans are getting shorter with younger people and things like that. Are these things that are considerations, or do you still write in a very traditional format of like the song's the song?
Yeah, I mean,
do you get where I'm going with that question?
Yeah, Jared? Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. But I think actually it goes beyond that, because I think that I am also influenced, and I also actually my attention span is getting shorter as well. Unfortunately, I wish it didn't, but there's a convenience to everything now. And I've been thinking about this also, like, why do people not really listen to albums anymore? I think it's because there isn't, like, but like when I was a kid, because I'm kind of old now or whatever, I used to like walk around with my Walkman. I had like a whole album and I was just walking, listening to music. And back then I didn't have an iPad or with Netflix on it, or, you know, and I think that a lot of this TV binging has taken over what records used to be in terms of stimulants and, you know, things to occupy your mind. I mean, with Mew, we've had to make single edits. I would say that's the most we've felt pressure to do something to the music. But other than that, we haven't let it influence us so much. But I think in recent years, I also start losing my patience too quickly with things, you know. And a friend of mine once said that, you know, nothing is interesting unless you're interested. And I think that goes along with music. It's like you kind of have to invest yourself in it a little bit. Unless it's just really kind of stupid, straightforward. Like if you want to have something that's worthwhile, you have to actually invest some time and some energy into getting to know it, you know. And I think that is really slipping away from the world, unfortunately.
You mentioned about people listening to albums, you know, in their entirety, rather than going on iTunes and cherry picking tracks or creating playlists on Spotify. When you put in a record together, do you still approach the track listing in a way that you wish the album to be listened to as a body of work?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think the order of songs is very important. We've done one album in Mew where all the songs kind of segue into each other. But even with the ones that don't do that, it's important. I think it's at least, you know, you might as well put the effort in, even if people are not going to listen to it like that.
Sure.
If some people choose to, you might as well give them the perfect running order, right?
Absolutely.
So we try hard to do that.
And I think that's, you know, when you said you'd walk around listening to, you know, your Walkman and things, it's like, I was very much the same. And I've got songs now that when I hear them and it finishes, on the radio, I presume that I know what song's coming next because of them years and years of listening to them in a certain sequence. Do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Yeah, I feel the same way.
Okay, well, let's take you back to the formative years. And I'm going to ask you for track two to tell me, please, the first song you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you.
Yes, I think that, you know, my first memories of music was obviously the music my parents were listening to. My dad listened to a lot of Beatles, but I think Kate Bush is the first thing that I sort of clearly remember sitting in the back of my parents' car and listening on their car system. And it was, you know, her compilation record, The Whole Story, where I think she actually re-recorded some of the vocals for some of the songs. But that's all I knew of her was that album. And it had obviously Cloud Busting on it and Running Up That Hill. And I didn't necessarily understand what she was singing about, but they felt like little, like stories, you know, like otherworldly things.
Fairy tales,
like,
yeah.
Fairy tales, yeah. And that really connected. I think that was, even not knowing what she looked like, she was my first crush.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that it's really weird. I think like just that initial thing with Kate Bush is just sonically, it just sounds like nothing else.
Yeah.
And I think, and then you start to kind of peel the layers of the onion and you just get lost in just another universe of absolute magic. Right.
And she's great because she's so experimental in her approach, and yet she never gives that, like, it's always just great melodies as well. You know, it's not weird avant-garde, which can be amazing as well, but it also is pop music.
Yeah.
And it's just, and it really, and it's always like that. It has your heart by the strings, you know? So, she might be my favorite artist of all time.
Did you, I don't think she played outside of the UK. Did you get to the UK for them shows about 6-7 years ago?
It was sold out in 10 seconds.
Yeah.
I tried so hard, but it was like a really annoying system where you had to choose the date. And I was like, any date, just give me a ticket. And it's like, oh, choose the date. Oh, no, it's taken out, back out. And then, like, and then it's gone. You know?
Yeah.
So, I failed, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I had friends who went and said it was amazing.
Yeah, I did. My friend went and they said they kind of... I think they confiscate your phones on the way in and you got them back on the way out so that you couldn't capture any footage. And I thought, what a brilliant thing to do, to have them moments where, no, this is a moment. Don't worry about filming it. Be there. Live it. You know, and it just purely enjoy it. Wonderful.
I had some friends who went and they said, like, in the intermission, we were just standing having a drink, and then Wendy Smith came over from Prefab Sprout and we said hi to her, and she was really, and we, you know, talked for a while, and one of the other guys from Prefab Sprout, and I was just like, oh. Because I'm a big Prefab Sprout fan.
Yeah.
So that would have been just an extra, you know.
Has Paddy been quite influential on you then as a songwriter?
I think, in some ways. I mean, I love Prefab Sprout. I got to know it because somebody compared our first ever record to Prefab Sprout, which I don't really understand. I think maybe it's the first ever album we did had maybe some of the really ambitious ideas that might seem a bit naive, a little bit like the very first Prefab Sprout album, Swoon, has so many ideas, but it's also a little lo-fi, but other than that, I don't really see the comparison. But then I was working at a place and my boss there was a big Prefab Sprout fan, so we had all the albums and I used to listen to them while I worked. So and it's just a beautiful body of work that he's created.
Absolutely. Staying in the early years, Jonas, I'm going to ask you, please, for track three, to tell me a song that reminds you of your time at school, please.
Yeah, my time at school. I mean, right around the time that we figured out that we wanted to be a band was probably like the eighth grade. It was like 13, 14 years old. And at that point, I was really into the Pixies. I had a friend who was a bit older, and Nirvana had come out, and he was like, yeah, that's cool, but, you know, check this out. And he lent me, I think it was Doolittle and Bossa Nova, and I just became obsessed with and had to have everything that they made, and even all the B-sides. I was really obsessed, and still a huge fan of the Pixies. So I would have to go with Pixies.
Yeah, excellent. Are you going to go Wave of Mutilation or Valoria? What are you going for?
I'll go Wave of Mutilation.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Just as we're being nostalgic and looking back here, I just want to ask you what your thoughts are on nostalgic tours. Reason being, you know, over recent years, I've been to see the Pixies perform Doolittle. And Lemonheads do Shame About Ray, and all sorts of bands from them years of me being a teen and loving it. And Jane's Addiction, all these bands have come and toured that album. I just wonder, like, what your thoughts are on bands doing that.
I think it's cool. I mean, we did it ourselves, actually, in 18. We did with the Fringes album. It is kind of, it's nice to, you know, for people, I think, to have the opportunity to see, to sort of hear a whole album, a favorite album live from start to finish. I think that's a cool idea, you know?
Absolutely.
There was a point when we started talking about it, when I was a little against it, because I said, like, isn't this kind of what bands do at the end of their career? You know, but it was just a misconception. It's become much more popular to do it. You know, I wish I'd been able to see David Bowie do his low tour, you know. And I saw the Pixies as well, too. We actually supported them in a show in America where they were doing that Doolittle.
How was that?
That was great. Yeah, it was beautiful.
Oh, wonderful. My brother runs a bar in Australia and in Brisbane, and the Pixies were playing that night, and he was just behind the bar in his place, and he said, like, I just looked up and Frank Black just walked into my bar, and he said, and I tried to be really cool and pretend that I didn't recognise him, and he come and asked for some food, and he said he just started chatting, and he was just like, so is this your bar? And he was like, yeah. And my brother said, oh, what are you doing here? And he said, oh, I'm in a band. And he was like, I've got to let you, I know, I love your band. And he said he was so cool. My brother said, look, I want to pay for your dinner. Like, don't, you haven't got to pay. Like, can I just get a photo with you? Like, Pixies are one of my favourite bands. And he went, I can't let you pay for my dinner. He's like, I'm going to pay for your dinner. And he said, and when he walked out, the girl that was the bar person that was giving out the drinks, he just gave like a $100 tip to as he walked out. And I just thought, what a top guy. If you just didn't love the Pixies enough, just to know that that person at that moment was still wonderful. Like, I love hearing little stories about people that you really love, like, that, you know, just definitely seem like genuinely nice people, you know?
Yeah. I haven't, like, people say don't meet your heroes, but I haven't had a bad experience with any of that stuff yet.
Wonderful.
Knock on wood. Yeah.
Do you get in awe of people? Do you get in awe of, like, when you meet people that have, you know, but the fact that, you know, within your own right, you've reached incredible levels of success in music. Like, do you, and I use this term with respect, do you get that imposter syndrome sometimes, just thinking, oh my God, that's that band. Like, do I just go up and say hi because I'm in a band? Like, you know, well, how do you deal with that? And do you get, like, nervous and that kind of,
well, I think I'm kind of shy as a person. I've had, you know, many times when I kind of wanted to go up and say something and didn't, you know.
Oh, really?
Even with people that I'd met before and went to dinner with, and like, should I go? You probably don't remember me or whatever, you know, like that kind of thing. I'm a little bit, you know, withdrawn. Yeah. I do become in awe of people. I have to say, it's not so much, oh, this person is really famous. It's just like what this person has meant to me, especially, I guess, in a nostalgic way, that my teenage heroes, meeting those people, you know.
Absolutely.
I think as you get older, maybe you don't idolize people as much anymore. So it is something that kind of.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
From the past, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Listen up, I've only got another new sponsor, Egg Fried. It's this super cool clothing label, and if you're into sort of skating and street art and gigging and kind of like really cool art and throwing a little bit of Asian culture and the designer's kind of weird sense of humor in the mix, then you're pretty much there with the wonderful world that is eggfried.com. Now, they do these amazing punchy kind of graphic tees, hoodies and sweatshirts, beautiful art prints, as well as this. They have a denim range, all handmade in-house, all supporting the slow fashion movement. Not only that, they've given you a discount code, 10% off when you head over to eggfried.com. Just use the code EGGSALAD, E-G-G-S-A-L-A-D, save 10%. Go and get lost in the world of Egg Fried. Also, they've got a new kids range. And it's called Small Fried, and it's super cool, super cute. And again, it's all over there in this wonderful world. Go and get involved at eggfried.com. We'll stay in the past. Well, no, I want to talk about school briefly before we move on. And was school something that you enjoyed?
Yeah, I enjoyed elementary school. I didn't really enjoy high school as much. It was a weird... I didn't really feel like I fit anything like that, but I just kind of... I didn't really know how to... Can you hear me?
Yeah.
It's saying my internet connection is bad.
It paused briefly, but well, we're good.
I think, I mean, we played in Mew already in high school, and you know, we're trying to get to play places, but our music was really not the sort of the popular stuff at that point, you know? So I don't know. I guess for a variety of reasons, I didn't enjoy that so much, but of course the friendships that emerged from it and all that have been very valuable to me.
You said that, you know, Mew was already playing shows and stuff. Was that something that you knew you wanted to do, or was there something else that you was thinking about doing as a career, or was music always at the forefront?
I think that we started the band because we were a bunch of friends and we were all kind of creative and it didn't really start as a band. I always kind of have been really into, you know, animation and music and drawing and stuff like that. And most of my friendships back then were kind of based around that, you know, like let's make a weird little film together or something. So that was just part of it. And then, you know, Nirvana came out and I was really into the Pixies and I thought maybe, you know, I could be in a band. But it wasn't like, I don't think if I hadn't had those friends at that particular time, I don't think I probably would have formed a band. It's never been like an ambition to, I want to be on stage, everyone looking at me. You know, that's kind of a tricky thing for me. You know, for me, it's more about creating the music and expressing something, you know.
Do you still find it difficult, like being on stage? Is that kind of sort of a side of confidence that is always like something you have to kind of, you know, work with?
I always get quite nervous before a show. And the few times that I haven't been nervous, it hasn't been a good show. So I think that, it's also part of the reward. Like when you go there and you really do your best and then it went well. It's like, oh my God, you know. Whereas if it's just like, I'm just going to work now, then you won't feel as ecstatic from it, I don't think. I'm really impressed. Like I see friends sometimes backstage and they're like sitting talking about like, oh, should we go to your place on Saturday and watch the game? Okay, cool. I'm just going to go and play for 50,000 people, but let's finish, you know. And I'm like, I'm not like that, you know. Even Johan, my bass player, he can talk about football like 5 seconds before we go on stage. And I'm like, what? You know, like, my mind is only here, like, you know. So, yeah, but people are different in that respect. I do enjoy, but I'm kind of a perfectionist. So that's part of my nervousness is that I'm scared that it's not going to be perfect. And of course, it never is perfect. Yeah. So, you know, so there's that. But I try to get around that.
Well, confidence aside, if the fact that, you know, from a young age, you chose an incredibly competitive and difficult industry to achieve the level of success that you have.
Yeah.
And continue to move forward with. Would you say you're very driven?
Definitely. Yeah, I am. And I don't really know the reason, but I do really feel a need to engage in creative things, to just feel happy, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. Maybe it's escapism. You know, I hope it's not all that. I hope there's more to it than that. But because I quite like the world, I don't know why I have. I mean, horrible things going on in the world. But I don't know why I have the need to sort of create my own fairy tale. You know, but I kind of do.
Right, this is the last song from the formative years, and I'm going to ask you to tell me the first record you remember buying from a record store, please, Jonas.
Yeah, well, it was either there was an album, it was a Dutch group called, I think it was Video Kids, and they had a song called Woodpeckers from Space.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, everyone was really into breakdancing. It was like, I think you bought that record and you got a pair of white gloves for breakdancing.
That's so cool.
But I think that came with the record. I'd never really learned how to breakdance, unfortunately. But I was really into that song. I still have it, actually. It's a 7-inch maxi single.
Nice.
And it's really annoying. It's just high-pitched. Although a lot of current music sounds a bit like that, actually.
I'd never heard it. And I listened to it when I got your list over. And it sounds very much of its time. And it's a kind of production sound that you can kind of hear.
Yeah.
Again there.
Absolutely, yeah. With the sampled voices and the sped up things. And Yeah.
And that, I'll take it as Woody Woodpecker, right?
I don't think it is... Yeah, maybe it is. Yeah, of course. It probably is, yeah. But he's not on the cover, so they probably weren't allowed to use him.
Yeah.
But it's either that or it's... and I didn't buy them myself. My parents kind of let me buy something. And I also got The Cure, their 7-inch Love Cats single, which I loved.
At that age, did you like that record in any other level than it being quite a upbeat pop song with plinky plonky piano sounds on it? You know, was you aware of the depths that you can fall into if you start discovering The Cure and where that can take you?
No, and I that was the only song that I knew of theirs for many years after that. I don't know why I might have even just bought it because it had some cats on the cover or something. You know, I don't think I knew the song before buying it. And I remember that I was playing it on 33 RPMs, even though it was a 7-inch. So it was like slowed down. And I thought it was just so mysterious and cool. And then I was kind of disappointed when I found out that it had to be run faster.
But well, it didn't matter because about 10 years later, they'd done Disintegration, and that was kind of played at that speed, and that was about as heavy and as weird as it could get.
An amazing album as well, But I didn't actually get, I mean, at that point, I think I was, you know, I think I had a Paula Abdul album, you know, it was just like, I was a kid, you know, just trying things out. And I think that's also one thing that gets more difficult with age is you form your sense of aesthetics and it's hard to change them after a while, or it's hard to keep them open, you know. But I remember when me and the other guys in the band, when we started like going to record shops and getting, we would buy all kinds of stuff. We'd buy like death metal and then we weird Japanese jazz thing, and like I don't know, I just that was cool, you know. I always thought, you know, we should listen to things that most people don't listen to, because then maybe we'll be inspired to make something unusual, you know, rather than make something. It's kind of a naive thought, but I did think, you know,
So the record company record shops become like important places for you growing up.
Yeah, absolutely. There were two sort of main places we went to in Copenhagen. And one of them is still there. It actually turned into a little bit of a sex shop as well, like a bondage kind of thing.
Bondage and records. That's a good
day. Yeah, they used, but and it's mostly metal. And I mean, it was also mostly metal they sold back then. But they also had, I remember buying a whole album there, and Sonic Youth and stuff like that. But the other place has closed down many years ago, and you know, there's still some vinyl stores, but it's very very few that are left. Yeah.
For track five, I'm going to ask you for a song that soundtracked your year's clubbing, and I always have to have like an addendum to this because I feel like I should always put it when I send the questions that. What I've realised over the 300 plus episodes with most people that are in bands or actors or DJs is that they're not big clubbers. And, and so this question can also be going to your local indie night. This question doesn't have to be that time that you had your shirt off with glow sticks raving to like techno at like 4 a.m. It can be any kind of experience or like, you know, songs from like dive bars and things like that just stick in your mind from them kind of years.
I mean I did go to bars and to clubs, but I didn't, you know, I didn't go to raves, and I always, like, I remember in school when the kids started sort of like having parties and you'd be like dancing, I always thought it was so awkward, and I just looked at it and was like, it doesn't look good, you know, like nobody looks good doing this, like, so why are we doing it? And so I think, you know, there was one girl in my class who kind of she knew a lot of cool music, so she kind of had her finger on the pulse, and I would say she played a lot of, and then I don't even know how to say her name, but Nina Cherry, yeah. I think she made some great songs, like Manchild and the Buffalo Stance.
Yeah.
It's like, we always hang in a Buffalo Stance. What is that about? Like,
Do you know?
No, I don't.
So there was a fashion movement, and I think it was called like, but was it called the Buffalo? It was like a movement. And it was like fashion movement, but it was just a complete look. And it was it like Buffalo Girls and Buffalo Boys? And there was a famous model called Jamie Jane Morgan that then had a music career off the back of that. And he was one of them. And it was this moment. And I guess it was lots of like the way that they carried themselves. I hope I'm getting this right. I'm pretty sure it's not far off the truth. But I think we always hang in a Buffalo Stance was in tribute to that fashion movement and the stylistic kind of look that fashion movement. I believe that that's it. But to be honest, Naina Cherry could do anything and look exceptionally cool because she's a...
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
An incredible artist.
Yeah, someone said that because she put out a new record, I think, like a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And I haven't heard it, but a friend of mine said it's actually really, really good.
So really,
I have to check that out.
She kind of made a lot of music that kind of after the like she became huge in the UK with the album's called Raw Like Sushi, the first record, and that was huge in the UK. And then she had a big hit with Yusin Adore, 7 Seconds.
Yeah.
That was quite
7 Seconds. Yeah, I remember that one.
And but she released a song with Michael Stipe called Trap, and it's so good. And it's like, but it just seemed to just get passed by, and I think people are now. It's been long enough that I think people are now realizing just how important she was to that genre of like UK hip hop at that time. That, you know, people are now recognizing Naina Cherry for what she's done, and yeah, the new record's incredible. And she kind of was very much involved in the Wild Bunch, which I don't know if you know, there was members of Massive Attack and stuff like that. She was like part of that kind of Bristol scene. And if you watch, I've got quite a few facts about Naina Cherry, it would appear.
Yeah.
But I watched the recent, I don't know if you've seen the recent documentary about the Slits. And
no.
It's incredible. I think Naina Cherry was like, joined the Slits on tour when she was like 13 and went on tour with the Slits playing all over the world because they were big fans of her. Was it her dad that was Don Cherry, the jazz musician? I believe so. And it's... I don't know why I've just bombarded you with a load of stats about Naina Cherry, but yeah, she's...
I'm happy to learn.
She's marvellous.
yeah, she is, yeah.
And Buffalo Stance is an incredible pop record. It really is. And before we move on, just... because we're going to take you back home for track 6, and I want to know about your home county, but you mentioned earlier like being in the car and listening to Kate Bush and the Beatles. What other music was you sort of exposed to? Was there always music on at home?
Yeah, pretty much. a lot of Eurythmics my parents listened to, which I still really love Eurythmics. Chris Jones. And also Rolling Stones. But I was much more into Beatles than Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
Which I guess you have to pick one.
Absolutely. I'm with you on that one, Jonas.
Yeah.
So... yeah, heading home for track 6. I'm going to ask you for your favorite song from an artist from your home county, please.
Right. Well, there is this singer called C.B. Jørgensen, and he only sings in Danish. And he's been kind of going for... he still releases records, fairly, not often, but like every few years. But he has a song, I don't know, I think it's from the 70s, called Elisabeth. And it's about... basically is about coming home to an area where an ex-girlfriend used to live and seeing it and seeing how everything's, it's like the moment in time that is ceases to be, you know, and you know, the real nostalgia to it. It's a beautiful Danish lyrics. He would be like, you know, the kind of thing that I would put on if I want to cry a little bit.
So I'll ask you around that then. So if you have a day where you wake up and you're feeling low, do you listen to something super pop and up, or do you reach for Disintegration and process that emotion and, you know, immerse yourself in it for a bit?
I do, you know, I have a little bit of a melancholy demeanor, and I was thinking in recent times that maybe I have listened to too much sad music because I just love sad music so much, you know, it really makes me feel something and it's relatable and it makes you feel less alone with all the bad thoughts and stuff. But I went a few years ago to see the B-52s with my friend, and it was great. You know, it was wonderful. And I didn't really listen much to B-52s, but I am sort of thinking now that, you know, if I have a bit of a bad day, maybe I should listen to some happy music instead of like delving into it at this point in my life anyway.
I mean, one of the most underrated vocalist ever is Kate Pearson from the B-52s. I think her voice is magnificent.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, last track. This is when
She did a song with R.E.M.
She's done a couple. She's done the Shiny Happy People, and I think she done, is it Texicana? Another track on Out of Time. And it's beautiful because they're both from Athens, aren't they? In Georgia, I believe.
And she did a song with Junior Senior, a Danish band.
Oh, really?
No, she sang on one of their songs. I'm quite sure. Yeah, I'm pretty sure she did, yeah.
Oh, wow. I've never heard that. What was the global hit, the Junior Senior?
Move Your Feet.
Oh, what a pop record that is.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, God. Okay, last track. So you can play DJ now, Jonas, and it's a song that many may not know that you would like them to hear, please.
Yeah, a few years ago, I was listening to, you know, the band Efterklang, Danish band. They have a radio station called The Lake. I think you can listen to it online, thelake.com, and a lot of weird stuff on there. But one time, I just like to listen to it when I'm working on visuals and stuff. And this song came on by Lucimila Carpio. She's from Bolivia, and she uses traditional Bolivian folk instruments. She has a magnificent voice. She can do really high flute voice, and I just never heard rhythms like that before. It's such a bizarre, like when they start the guitar, the string things, it's like, where's the one? How is that a meter? And then she starts singing and it all makes sense. But for a while you're just like, is that just erratic?
Yeah.
You know, and there's one album in particular, it's called the Jujuan Tapes, I think it's called. I love that whole record. It's like falling in love listening to it. It's a little demanding for some to listen to, I would say, but it's quite good. And this song that I would choose is called Jiwase. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right.
Wonderful.
It's beautiful.
Well, Jonas, we put together a Spotify playlist to accompany the podcast with all the songs that we've spoken about today.
Great.
And we'll put the new track on as well.
Should we put some Nene Cherry on there?
Let's do that.
Good.
That's never a problem. And so as we find ourselves, hopefully, you know, on a road out of the bizarre, you know, year and a half that we've been working our way through, what are you looking forward to as the world, you know, starts to readjust again personally, and what's happening professionally?
Well, me and Toby are doing more techie stuff. I look forward to that and to playing some shows eventually. Right now, we have a new show scheduled for the 6th of August. It's a festival in Finland. So I'm hoping that's going to happen. And also shown in London in September and Copenhagen and some other stuff. So hopefully they will happen and hopefully more will happen. And on a personal level, I do look forward to being able to travel some more again.
Yeah.
And I kind of been stuck in one place for a bit too long now, I feel.
Yeah, I think we're all feeling a bit like that. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Jonas, it's been delightful talking records with you. I really appreciate your time today. And sorry if I overloaded you with Nana Cherry facts. Got a little bit excited.
I feel enriched.
I'm going to go and listen to the junior, senior Kate Pearson tracks. I've not heard it. I need to hear this. Have a lovely day. All the best for the music and look forward to seeing you at the London show.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'll see you. Come back and have a drink after.
Sounds wonderful. Thanks loads, Jonas.
Yeah. Thank you.
Oh, I was a little bit fanboy there, I'm not going to lie. I love Mew. I think they're an incredible band. And he was everything and more. You can tell I was star-struck. I started like nervously rattling off Nana Cherry facts. Well, I don't know where that come from. And I got overexcited at the mere mention of Kate Pearson. Wonderful. What a smashing man. And go check out Tacky's, the new project. The track that they've put up on Spotify is absolutely wonderful. Go give it a listen. Go and get stuck in. And, yeah, go check out Mew. If you've never stumbled across the magic that is Mew, go get stuck in because it's glorious. I'm back next time. In the meantime, give us a like, love, share, retweet, all of the usual stuff, subscribe, and just generally be excellent to each other, and I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
It's Off the Beaten Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.